Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated August 2nd, 2016. We'll begin today with a feature article appearing on the front page, and the headline reads, Names Live On to Inspire. It was written by Valerie Wells, and it's under the heading of Education. Craig Brooks is his mother's only child and spent his childhood watching her coach girls' basketball at Eisenhower High School. Quote, every one of those kids she taught and coached was her kid, Brooks said. That's why she was so successful. Even now, he is recognized by his mother's former players and students, even if they haven't seen him since he was a little boy. And he doesn't mind in the least if they say, aren't you Miss Brooks' son? Instead of, are you Craig? Ida Brooks was a strong woman and a huge influence on everyone she met. The memory of Ida Brooks will be honored at Eisenhower when the practice gym is named for her. The ceremony is set for December 3rd, which is also her son's birthday. Brooks's teams were uniformly successful. Among her recipes for success was having the girls work out with weights, which the players said increased their endurance. Practices were intense, and Brooks pushed her players to work hard. Eisenhower girls win was a pretty common headline in the H&R during the basketball season. When the Decatur School Board, as part of its retirement agreement with former Superintendent Gloria Davis, named the auditorium at Eisenhower in her honor, some controversy was generated by former students and fans of the school's drama and choral teachers who thought the honor should have been accorded to Shirley Kistler and Milton Scott. They too will be honored when the fine arts wing is named for them. At the time the school board announced the decision to name the auditorium for Davis, a group started a petition to name it for Kistler instead, and some included Scott in that as well. Both worked at Eisenhower during the same period. Scott, who directs Opus 24, retired from Decatur Schools in 2000 after 27 years directing choirs there. He also taught at Roosevelt Middle School, Southeast School, and Washington School during his career. He is a graduate of Millikan University. Upon his retirement, former student Annette Nolte, who was then a music teacher at Holy Family School, told H&R Community News editor Bob Falstrom, quote, he is a legend. He'll leave a legacy unsurpassed by any teacher. Kistler retired in 2001 and has remained active in the performing arts in Decatur, serving as mistress of ceremonies for the Decatur Municipal Band and working with her old pal, Scott, on community productions for Junior Welfare Association. Roxy Dotson Danius, who teaches at Durfee Magnet School, told the H&R in 2010 that Kistler had inspired her to become a teacher. Danius was a student of Kistler's at Eisenhower. I remember just sitting in her class and being in awe of her, Danius said. She taught me life skills I still use today, and I just really admire her. And at MacArthur High School, the Fine Arts Wing will be named for retirees Jim Culbertson and Tim Waller. Culbertson led the legendary MacArthur Jazz Band to a plethora of awards over the years, and the band's rehearsal room in the high school was lined with the trophies the musicians brought back from festivals all over the country. The group was featured in Downbeat magazine, and the band was lauded as the best in both the United States and Canada. Musicians who played with the group as high school students have gone on to teach and perform all over the country, most notably Brian Culbertson, who is a recording artist with 15 albums to his credit, and Chris Strong, who leads the MacArthur Music Program now, and said he still seeks advice from his former teacher. Walker, who taught English in addition to overseeing the theater program at MacArthur, also was a mentor to the students. MacArthur tackled every genre from musical to comedy to serious drama during his tenure, and students who went on to professional success in acting include Aaron Baker. Quote, "Then, when I was a freshman in high school, my English theater mentor, Tim Waller, a man whose wealth of experience and genius I could not begin to summarize, had the acumen to usher me onto the stage," Baker told the HNR in 2012. The ensuing time I spent under his guidance remains the most valuable training I've received as an actor. I'll describe the photos that accompany this article. First of all, from the H&R files, there's a photo from 1989 of the MacArthur Jazz Band One, directed by Jim Culbertson, who were practicing for their appearance at Music Fest USA in Philadelphia. There's also a photograph of Eisenhower High School girls basketball team in 1977. It was coached by Ida Brooks. Photograph holding their hands together on a basketball were Kim Smith, Brooks, Paulette Smith, Sean Rawls, Julie Forbes, and Barbie Kipper. From 1988, there's an H&R file photo of Milton Staff, Scott, who was the choral director at Eisenhower, keeping the beat during Jackie James's dress rehearsal for the school's talent show. There's also a photo of Jim Culbertson directing the Decatur Municipal Band in 1982. Finally, Milton Scott leads Eisenhower's music class on the piano in a 1983 photo. Another front page article has this headline, "No Gleason Charges to be Filed." City Manager Tim Gleason, who was accused of wrongdoing by former police chief Brad Sweeney for using a police car and driver for personal purposes, will not be facing charges of official misconduct for his actions. A special prosecutor for the state's attorney's appellate prosecutor's office informed Macon County Circuit Judge A.G. Weber by letter that he, quote, declined to file charges. Quote, "I have reviewed the evidence and conducted supplementary interviews," prosecutor Matt Goten wrote in his letter, which was copied to Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott. Goten qualified his decision to withhold charges by adding that, quote, "further relevant information may be considered as it becomes available," which could later change his decision. The letter, dated July 28th, was received by officials in Decatur on Monday. A special prosecutor was appointed May 30th to investigate allegations that Gleason used the police resources on May 7th, 2015, to travel from Decatur to the St. Louis airport for a personal trip following his appearance at the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce State of the City breakfast. Gleason said the late mayor, Mike McElroy, who died in July, had told him to use a police car and officer for the trip. Gleason had begun serving as city manager in March 2015 under a 3-year contract. Gleason's use of the car and driver has been a main point in Sweeney's lawsuit against the city. Sweeney alleged that Gleason fired him on February 4th, partly because he objected to his personal use of police resources. Sweeney's wrongful termination lawsuit was dismissed. He has filed an appeal to the dismissal. In a statement released by Gleason on Monday, he said he trusted the legal process, but it was not enjoyable to have his integrity questioned. Quote, "While I had no concerns and had excellent witnesses to the truth, it is nice to have this officially over with," Gleason said. "We can now continue to move forward with addressing the challenges and seizing opportunities for Decatur." The Macon County State's Attorney's Office filed the request for the special prosecutor based on the possibility of the appearance of impropriety or a conflict of interest in the case. And this was submitted by Huey Freeman. Also on page one is this article by Chris Lusfardi. More Wolf planning run for Decatur mayor. Julie Moore Wolf became mayor of Decatur under difficult circumstances last year following the death of Mike McElroy. Over the past year, she turned one of the most unforgettable and unimaginable experiences of her life into one of its most rewarding times. Now, Moore Wolf is hoping Decatur voters will allow her to continue building on what has been started. While she and previous mayors, including McElroy and Paul Osborne, have been in office, Moore Wolf, 56, was joined Monday at the Decatur Civic Center by family members, business representatives, and other community members to announce her plans to run for mayor in the 2017 municipal election. Quote, "I believe in this community," Moore Wolf said. "I've enjoyed the past year and the work of being mayor. It's sad Mike McElroy wasn't here to finish everything that was started." Moore Wolf wants to be able to see various projects through that are underway or have been discussed. She said remodeling of the city's fire stations is among the items in most need of attention. After a solution was found in recent years to address space issues for the police department. Dredging of Lake Decatur is an ongoing project, and Moore Wolf said the city council continues to look for ways to further improve the community's aging infrastructure. Recent changes to downtown Decatur have made it more of a destination, she said. "We have a beautiful downtown," Moore Wolf said. "It can be hard to find a parking spot. People are down there. Some of them are finding Pokemon. It's the place to be." Another area of focus for Moore Wolf that has gained more attention in recent weeks is seeking a voice for community members who are disenfranchised. Some people feel that like their voice is not being heard, she said. Connecting them with resources that are available to help is a key part of Moore Wolf's plan. Quote, "The city can be the entity that bridges the gap," Moore Wolf said. "There are programs available that are designed to help provide training for jobs. Making the most of tax dollars will be an issue as funding sources become more limited," Moore Wolf said. She will look for creative ways to make the most out of the money that is available. The city's motor fuel tax is an example of what has been done to provide funding to fix neighborhood roads in a way that wouldn't have otherwise been possible, Moore Wolf said. Utilizing partnerships with other entities, including Macon County and the Decatur Park District, can help make a difference, especially if road and rail projects are to be completed, she said. Moore Wolf said the Midwest Inland Port is opening opportunities for economic development. Moore Wolf is believed to be the first woman to serve as mayor and would be the first one elected if her campaign is successful. While proud to be seen as breaking barriers, Moore Wolf said her focus is on the job of leading the city, where she has lived for 30 years. She is married to Doug Wolf and has 3 children. Moore Wolf was previously elected twice to the city council. No other candidate has yet declared their intention to run for mayor in the 2017 race. On page 3, we find this article about the library. The headline is "Puppets Make Fables Real." And a subheadline reads, "Library's Summer Reading Program Participants Get Fun Taste of Aesop's Work." It's written by Valerie Wells. It's the rare entertainment that can enthrall all ages, from babies to grandparents, but Mad Cat Puppets can do it. The company out of Cincinnati typically has 3 2-person troupes on the road and perform 3 shows at the Decatur Public Library for the participants in the summer reading program. Michael Galusik and Kayla Burris have theater degrees and played several roles apiece in their offbeat version of Aesop's Fables. The storyline is that Aesop is enslaved by the master, who wants her to babysit his daughter, Xena. The only way to keep Xena from crying is to tell stories. From there, Galusik and Burris use puppets to act out the tortoise and the hare, the lion and the mouse, and the boy who cried wolf. Near the end of each tale, Aesop gives the moral of the story and said, "I ought to write that down," a joke perhaps only the adults caught, as all of Aesop's fables include a moral. For the boy who cried wolf, Burris recruited Nick Hamilton, who has been coming to the library's reading program since he was a very small child. Now a 7th grader, he was more than willing to wear the oversized sheep's head costume and say, "Bah," whenever Eustace, the boy, cried wolf. As Eustace, Galusik performed with a humanette, which is something like a marionette, except the puppet body is worn like a necklace, using the performer's own head as the puppet's head. The legs and arms are controlled with sticks, and it gives a comic effect to see the big head on the little body. Eustace thought it would be funny to watch Aesop come running when he cried, "Wolf," even though there was no wolf. "If you keep lying," Burris told Eustace at the end of the tale, after scaring him and the sheep with a wolf costume to prove her point, "no one will believe you, even when you're telling the truth." After the show, the actors demonstrated the different kinds of puppets and explained how they learned to change their voices and develop characters for the puppets. Gelasek said he mimicked cartoon characters from the time he was a child. "I probably drove my folks crazy," he joked. Burris had a similar history and said one of the difficult things about the show is when she's voicing both the puppet and her own character at the same time. "I'm trying to talk to the baby and be the baby," she said, "so I throw focus. That means when I'm talking to the baby's looking at me, so you will too." The summer reading program can already boast of more than 300 children who have finished all five of their goals, with more than 1,200 signed up. "Some registered up only a week or two ago," said children's librarian Katie Gross, due to Decatur School's summer camps and other events earlier in the summer. All finishers receive a free book, and those books, as well as the shows, such as Aesop's Fables, are paid for by the Friends of the Library. You can tell how much fun the children are having at this show when you hear about the photograph in color that accompanies this article. It shows the hare, Michael Gelusek, who has got one of these costumes that just goes over his entire body, and the tortoise, played by Kayla Burris, racing to the finish line. And my goodness, her eyes are big, and you can just see this big fuzzy tortoise puppet moving ahead in the race. So Elizabeth Elliott is a young girl who is taking photos of the performance at the library. Also on this page, we find an article about the city. The headline is "City Stretching Street Dollars by Rebidding," written by Dan Petrella. Supporters of changing the way Illinois legislative districts are drawn are arguing before the state's high court that voters should be allowed to have their say during the November 8th election, despite a lower court ruling blocking a referendum. A Cook County judge ruled last month that the group's proposal, which would give the power to draw district boundaries to an independent commission, goes beyond making structural and procedural changes to the General Assembly. That's the limit set forth in the state constitution for voter-driven initiatives. People's Map, the group that sued to block the ballot measure, has until Thursday to file a brief with the Supreme Court laying out its arguments. And here's the article about the city that I was talking about. This was Dateline Decatur, written by Chris Luzvardi, and the headline is "Local Motor Fuel Tax Projects Hit Speed Bump." The start of Decatur's road projects utilizing a newly implemented local motor fuel tax will be delayed after the City Council decided on Monday to reopen bids for the work. City Manager Tim Gleason said proposals for the projects came in $250,000 to $300,000 lower than expected, and recommended to the council that the city should try to get more done for the $1.5 million allocated to be spent in 2016. The council was split 4-3 on the issue. Gleason said the projects can be rebid and work can still start by midsummer, remaining in time to finish by the end of the year. If the bids had been approved, work could have been on schedule to start in mid-August, Gleason said. And quoting Gleason, "This is a unique opportunity to do even more work." Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the council wants to be careful with how the money is used, considering it's a new tax. Quote, "I want to get the most roads done with the tax. It's hitting all of us. Pushing the projects back a month shouldn't make a big difference in order to get more questions answered before proceeding," Moore Wolf said. Councilman Pat McDaniel suggested work proceed for projects on which bids have already been submitted and a bidding process reopened for more work to make up the difference. Quote, "We don't want to get the reputation of playing games," McDaniel said. "Then you get fewer contractors and bidders. This is not good business." McDaniel voted along with Councilwomen Lisa Gregory and Dana Ray to keep the bids that were submitted. Moore Wolf voted against accepting the bids along with Councilmen Jerry Dawson, Bill Faber, and Chris Funk. Two contractors submitted bids for the asphalt portion of the project, with city staff deeming one of the bids non-responsive. The council could have accepted the responsible low bid from R.W. Duntman Company of $978,114, or about 6.17% below the engineer's estimate. The company is not one the city has worked with previously. The one bidder was deemed unresponsive because it did not supply required information about subcontractors. And Rick Marley, Public Works Director, refused to openly name the non-responsive contractor. Seven contractors bid on the concrete portion of the project. Two of those were judged non-responsive, with the $385,535 responsible low bid from Otto Baum Company considered for approval. The Otto Baum bid was 14.74% below the engineer's estimate. Items involving the issuance of promissory notes for projects related to local street work and fire station renovations were pulled from the agenda earlier in the meeting. Gleason said it was at the request of Busey Bank and had nothing to do with city staff. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald Review, dated August 2nd, 2016. Please stay tuned.